Okay. And this is, finally, after all the history, proposals for U.S. monetary reform toward a fourth branch of government. And as you can see, I've added the fourth branch, monetary authority, as the fourth branch. Don, why don't you read the themes?
Why not? Themes of law, science, of money book. One, primary importance of the money power, that is, the power to create money and regulate it. Two, the nature of money purposely kept secret and confused. Three, how a society defines money determines who controls the society. Four, battle over control of money has raged for millennia, public against private. Five, the misuse of the monetary system causes tremendous misery and suffering for the ordinary people. Lynn Martin, February 2014. Six, last but not least, whenever the public has owned a significant fraction of the money power, great public benefit has ensued. Sparta, the Roman Republic, the American colonies in the 18th century, greenbacks after the Civil War, Canada after the Great Depression, and British experience after World War II. Martin, July 2014.
Well, there are themes, and they're still going on in today in our world. That's what the book has been all about. So these are the parts of the presentation, an introduction, who is responsible, the misdiagnosis of America's problems, monetary reform is crucially needed, money's nature must dictate monetary reform, distractions from sovereign money, the gold promoters, the free banking ideologues, local currency or let's advocates, and the all money is debt faction. Government's responsibility to provide the money. Eight, the AMI strategy, reforming the Federal Reserve System. And this week we'll do reform number one, nationalizing of the Federal Reserve. That's the beginning of that reform. And then at the 20th of September, we'll do the rest of the chapter. Okay. Will, do the first one.
Introduction. The American monetary system, wait a minute, I got to get this out of the way. The American monetary system is forcing more and more Americans into poverty. Americans go further into credit card debt at obscene rates of interest, around 20%. Much of the crime arises from an equitable money system rewarding the skills of financial manipulation and not an honest day's work. More working families slip into poverty. Drug and alcohol are used for escape from a break of bleak existence. And then you have the growth of private prisons and prison labor. No sheriff should ever be enriched for putting minorities in prison. Well, we've done that here in Oklahoma. We had a governor that was a criminal, a guy named Keating. He introduced private prisons and had stock in the prison companies.
Yeah, wow. And do the next one.
Who is responsible? Those in charge of the U.S. money system and their predecessors must bear a large part of the responsibility for this inequitable situation. They broke the banks in 1929 to 32 and would not reestablish the money supply except to make war. They proceeded to base the economy on the military-industrial complex for 5 decades, amassing many thousands of thermonuclear weapons, which could only be used if the Earth was being destroyed. The banking disasters of Penn Central, Continental Illinois, Franklin National, and the BCCI, among others, have kept U.S. banking fraud in the headlines over the years. The savings and loan scandals of the late 1980s and early 1990s were a direct result of their removal of government banking regulations and finally cost the American taxpayers over $100 billion to bail them out. That's for Zarlenga. And more recently, the financial crisis of 2008 and 9, U.S. family lost $11 trillion in wealth in 2008.
Yeah. And they don't go to prison. Wow. I'll do the next one. Who is responsible? If the banksters and politicians pull through with their bankrupt America scheme, it is time to fire them for failing and do what Iceland did. So here's a tale of two financial crises, collapses. In the USA, there were zero criminal charges. This is 2008. There were zero criminal charges. The banks were bailed out, the executives were given bonuses, and there were millions of foreclosures. In Iceland, the prime minister was indicted. 200 criminal charges were placed against bank executives. The banks were allowed to fail, and they forgave homeowners debt exceeding 110% of home value. And Zarlenga said, it appears to be a pillar of the U.S. justice and quotes system that the banking crime connected with these disasters must go essentially unpunished. I mean, it is pretty intense.
So now we finally know what Iceland did, because I've always heard Iceland did it different than us. So you just made it all wonderful.
Right, and their parliament came out with that wonderful report on sovereign money.
Yeah.
Very well written report, very easy to understand. I don't know what the next step is in Iceland, but I was very impressed with that report. And I saw the, I listened to on YouTube to an interview of the president of Iceland, and he said this thing that I really felt a lot about. He said, well, you know, people of Iceland had to make a decision. Were they going to decide for democracy or were they going to decide for the banks? And they decided for democracy, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does that say about us?
Oh, yeah. Our minds are so, I feel like our minds are so twisted by all of the input, that's mm-hmm. propaganda that's given yeah. to people, and lies, and never any mention of the truth of our money system. Yeah. And do the next one.
Misdiagnosis of America's problems. The nature of money is kept undefined and confused. Therefore, quote, the money system origin of so many of society's serious problems, end quote, are, quote, obscured. That's Zarlenga. And here we have this befuddled looking man looking down on a
maze.
A maze, yeah.
A dollar
sign maze. And Money Secrets with Benjamin Franklin
eyes.
Peering out, yeah. His eyes. Is it a Benjamin Franklin?
Yeah.
I think so.
From a bill.
I mean, this is. What? Like that?
I think it's from a bill. It looks like it's
yeah.
part of the engraving
yeah.
paper.
A Federal Reserve. No.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the crux, is that people in this country have no validation to understand money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I just find it incredible that we live in the midst of this system and none of us can identify that it even exists.
Yeah.
Don, do the next one.
In the 19th century, the system of money was discussed in national politics. Huge national movements of third parties, like the Greenback Labor Party, discussed the monetary system and made it the major issue. There's Peter Cooper's campaign poster and the national Greenback ticket that looks like a poster or something, to get a beautiful young lady waving a flag, an American flag.
It's pretty incredible when you think back then, people talked about it. Mm-hmm. It was like they had feelings about it. They went to the polls about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't know.
No.
They think everything is their fault.
They do?
I think. People don't know who to blame, and they think, well, if the credit card interest rate is 20% or 24% or whatever it is, they don't think that that's villainy on the part of the bank. They just say, well, it's the way it is, and I brought that on myself, and whatever.
Right. This if you're poor, it's your problem. If you're poor,
it's your fault.
It's your fault, you know. Yeah. That's been drilled into us for many, many years.
Why isn't there competition from somebody to come in and charge less than 20%? What keeps it from moving? You can take 8% and make money. 6% probably make money. There must be a limit.
I don't know how much competition there are between the big banks.
Yeah,
there's no. It'll take the high interest.
Yeah, they sort of like a oligarchy. We'll do the next one.
Still, the misdiagnosis of America's problems today. If economists mention money, they discuss it simply as a veil over the real economy. This miseducation allows the private control of the money system to grow and grow. And so economists do not discuss the money. Can you find the word money in there?
No. Yeah. It's not there.
It's not there, no. Nowhere.
It's not there.
So how can people think straight?
Monetary is the nearest thing.
Yeah.
And they think that means in just a moment. Wait a few monetaries. And
well, Steve Keen is the economist that's introducing the word money into economics now. What he's doing in London, at Kingston University. And he says that I was listening to something this morning, he named two other universities that were doing that, two or three, Greenwich University in London, and the Open University in Leeds, and Western England's University in Bristol. Are all kind of renegade economics programs, much like he's running in Kingston. Yeah. So he said it's attracting attention.
Great. You know, we need to attract some historians.
To get
this alternative history taught at colleges. I want to do the next one.
misdiagnosis, federal budget, and debt. The American public is told the government must balance income and expenses like a household. The government must either tax or borrow if it needs more money. So there's somebody examining this piece of paper about money. A look at the budget. Tax and spend, we have the Democrats, and the Republicans' policy is borrow and spend. So your fiscally irresponsible policies will run the country.
Ruin. That's the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Either
the only choice.
The only choice. This is what's in people's heads. The only choice.
They don't know that there is another choice.
No.
That's right.
No.
Government created money.
That's right. That is right.
T. King says run from anybody that compares the national budget to home. Your home budget. So run from them.
Does he mention names?
No. And but he calls it childish and immature and simplistic.
Right, but I also think it's a method of control, mind control. You know, these are the choices.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what's in the media. You know, just these two choices.
And he asked the question: Does your household have the ability to create money? There's the difference right there between a household and government.
Right. Right. I'll do the next one. Misdiagnosis: federal budget and debt. But the government is not households. The government has the power and responsibility of issuing debt-free money for the public good, creating it and spending it for public needs. And on the left, in the U.S. colonies, all colonial legislatures issued colonial paper currency. The colonies thrived on this debt-free money. It was called colonial script. Nice. Very powerful history, that is, of money.
So we do not have a digital system of money where they just had it in the accounts written down.
No, they
no currency to represent.
They used the paper script.
Totally.
Yeah. Lincoln funded the Civil War with congressional issued debt-free paper money called greenbacks, rather than borrow at high interest from the big banks.
That's real money. I hear the word real money. I think of greenbacks.
That's right. That's right. Doesn't go away when someone pays off a debt. And then sovereign money or government debt-free money creation is the book from Positive Money in London. Don, do the next one.
Misdiagnosis: the federal budget and debt. The current level of government debt cuts into the ability of our government to spend for the public good. The interest on the national debt soon will become the biggest item in the government's budget. But our government does not have to borrow money because it has, according to the U.S. Constitution, the power to create money. Federal debt total public debt. I see the rise of federal debt to $18 trillion starting to zoom up in the year 2000 and then really zooming up in 2010 till now. Interest expense fiscal year 2015. Well, where do we go from the bottom to the top? Oh, I see, that's the sum of all the fiscal year, each month. 350...
So far this year.
Thousand? Million,
billion.
Trillion.
Billion. Billion.
Billion. Billion. Trillion.
No, billion. Billion.
Billion?
18 trillion is the entire debt principal. 18 trillion.
Where is that shown? Over there.
$18 trillion. Yeah. That's everything our federal government owes.
That's the interest.
That's done. Interest for part of 2015. Just done. Part. Mm-hmm. I think there's 3 more months left. July, August, September. No, 2 more months left. But so far, almost $351 billion in interest has been paid out of our public treasury for this debt. That's unnecessary to be in debt. And this is
historical data. It's those years. Big totals.
Why don't you go? Just say a few of those years.
In 2010, it was 413, is that a billion?
Billion.
Billion. Close to 414 billion. And then the next year was 454 billion and a third more. And in 2012, it went down to 359 billion, almost 360. And in 2013, it was over 400 billion again, up 415 and more. And in 2014, it was almost as high as it had been in 2011. It was 430 billion, close to 431.
That's a lot of interest.
Yeah.
And a good part of the...
35
What?
35 billion a month.
Yeah. I'm just adding it up here. I'm curious. 8, 9, 14, 19, 20, 24, 26, 10, 17, 17 and 7. $2,400,000,000,000 since 2010 in interest.
Yeah, just interest.
Just interest because of this lousy system. Totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
Wow. Will, do the next one.
Misdiagnosis and deterioration of the American infrastructure system. Let me get something out of the way here.
The American Society for Civil Engineering.
Okay, you got the report card for America's infrastructure by the American Society of some engineers.
Civil.
Civil engineers, yeah. Surface transportation needs $1.7 billion, right? Is that what it reads?
Yep.
Water infrastructure, 120.
Oh, well, no. This is in billions already. So that's 1.7 trillion.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, 1.7 trillion. 126 billion for water, wastewater infrastructure, electricity, 736 billion, airports, 134 billion, inland waterways, and marine ports, 30 billion, dams, 21 billion. And hazardous solid waste, 56 billion, levees, 80 billion, public parks and recreation, 238 billion, rail, 100 billion, schools, 391 billion, and totaling $3,635,000,000,000, yearly investment of $454 billion.
Which is about approximately equal to the interest that we pay on the national debt every year. It would fund all of this infrastructure repair and building. Look at that. What a different country this would be.
We could do real things.
Oh.
Again, this results from not understanding that money should be created by government for such expenditures. Infrastructure spending is an excellent way to introduce new money into circulation, distributing it geographically, funding decent paying jobs, and leaving valuable infrastructure for the citizens to use for many years. Zarlinga, Los Angeles Money, page 654.
Look at all the jobs that would create. and all the skills it would give people. And all the...
And it's, these are jobs that ordinary people can do. You don't have to be a PhD, you don't have to be an engineer, you don't have to be a scientist.
That's right.
Ordinary people can do these jobs.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And everybody benefits from all of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Business as well as ordinary people.
Yeah, the economy is more efficient with everything working properly.
Sure.
Yeah. People.
100 billion in rail.
What will?
100 billion in rail. That would be. We might have a rail transit system.
People would be happier.
Exactly.
Well, my man can be.
They wouldn't have to buy.
Does he feel that?
Well, but if your stomach's full, it's easier to be happy.
That's true.
You know? And if you have a job, you're learning something at, I don't know. Okay. Ann.
Misdiagnosis, nullification of local government. This is a Zarlinger. The monetary strangulation of government occurs at the federal, state, and local levels. Small towns are forced into more debt in order to perform necessary functions. The interest costs on this debt approximately doubles the cost of all equipment, construction, or services provided.
Yeah.
Now, here's a graph. Dollars and billions. $120 billion, yes?
Right.
At the end of fiscal year 2011, New York City reached a milestone. The amount of debt outstanding passed $100 billion. As total debt outstanding has grown by 92% since 2002, the forms of debt the city issues have also diversified.
So, New York City, its debt has expanded 92% since 2002.
Mm.
92%. Mm-hmm. You could blame it on Bloomberg, but it's a phenomenal amount of debt for New York City. Debt system. And the other thing about this debt is a lot of the long-term expenses that the city has funded with debt, the people who make the money on it are the investment bankers,
mm-hmm.
who they buy the bonds and then they sell them to other investors.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in turn, borrow money from the private debt money commercial banks that fund the investment bankers. So this is total delight to the debt money system right here in New York City.
Are small towns at greater risk than big cities like New York? Do they have to pay with the higher rates than the big city?
Probably. I know I was in a council meeting where they were approving a vote for a new bond issue, which is going to be $150 million. And I was sitting just two people away from the bond salesmen that were there, the bond people. And as soon as the city council the ordinance, the city ordinance for the bond issue, they got up and walked out because they knew. They walked out with $60 million.
much interest.
Yeah. It was $150 million for the projects we want to do, plus $60 million for the interest.
Interest.
Oh, my God.
And if they delay in paying the interest, then they pay more interest.
And all of this simply because the American people haven't not been told that there's a third way of doing this.
Yeah. Another way.
Banks won't make any money on it, though.
Wow.
In those meetings, you have a chance to stand up and say that the government could be issuing this money without any interest?
That's coming. I'm going to get
to specific projects.
Well, the local governments don't have the right in the Constitution to issue money, local and states.
No, but they can get it from the federal.
But if we revise the Need Act a little bit, they could get, Mayor Roosevelt could go to the Treasury and say, I need this $150 million for these parks.
That's
and
right.
They'd say, and they said, look at your account, Mayor Roosevelt. It's there.
The Need Act had grants to the states and free loans with no interest to municipalities.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good. Very economical way to run a country.
And then people's taxes would be less. And they could spend more on their families and on themselves.
Well, they could make more repairs and fix things there so everything would work.
Yeah. I'll do the next one. Misdiagnosis, nullification of local government. Local governments are being advised to merge activities with other localities to save money. That's Stephen.
How does that work?
This is a news item.
Okay.
The town of Lancaster and the villages of Lancaster and Depew, the University at Buffalo Regional Institute said, the consolidation of the two police departments was expected to save taxpayers between $730,000 and $750,000 annually based upon a reduction in personnel. No formal assessment mechanism was established at the time of the proposed consolidation agreement. So services are being cut, serious services.
No formal assessment of how do you expect anything?
Well, they're just doing it.
They're just like a wild guess.
That's right. Don, do the next one.
Oh boy, rescuing Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Lack of money to pay for crucial programs is again not a fiscal, tax rates, government spending, but a monetary problem caused ultimately by the false idea that government must get money only by taxation or borrowing. The distribution of newly created government money through such programs is an excellent method of getting new money into circulation. It would be widely distributed by population and geography in small amounts. Hands off Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. We say no cuts to .org. Don't impoverish our seniors. Government debt-free money creation.
Yeah.
No black people there.
No, not yet.
All pink people.
They are pink, they're pink. Will, do the next one.
A broken down education system is all we got. The federal government could be supporting education much more if it were in control of the money system. It's our legal page 655. Schools are funded with local property taxes. Retired people are forced to trade their homes for the tax payments.
That's and do the next one.
A broken down educational system. Another larger problem of the schools is what's being taught. What's not being taught is how to think. But a financial system based upon so many falsehoods requires a high degree of ignorance in the population, or the system would be seen through and be overthrown. And Albert Einstein said, education is not the learning of facts, but training the mind to think. and critical thinking skills, reasoning, evaluating, problem solving, decision making, and analyzing.
Vice versa, probably not.
No.
Oh, it goes in the other direction?
I think it's kind of clockwise. Looks like you're making a decision after you do some thinking, analyzing, reasoning, and evaluating. Yeah. And then you solve the problem.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I remember when I was in high school, I was very good at memorizing, so I got good grades.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to think.
Yeah, I remember that very clearly. And I used to get really annoyed because they would give us a word problem in math and say, now what if da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da? Well, here's the formula for finding the answer. And I used to feel so frustrated. Let us reason it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe the nuns didn't know how to reason it out themselves. So they just gave us a formula.
There was a guy in my high school class named Jack Ryan. Looks like a combination of Irish and Chinese mix of parents. But we went on to Fordham, I think, and a classmate of his told me that he had solved the problem that in a way that the instructor had never seen in his life. Mm-hmm. And the instructor asked him to explain, how did he work this thing out? And he said, I'm sorry, I had to work with my father. His father was a moving man, moved furniture and stuff. I had to work for my father and wasn't able to do the homework, so I had to figure it out myself.
Wow!
he was really a smart guy with math.
Oh, my
gosh. Wow.
I remember, yeah.
You know, this makes me think that what we need, I mean, so Lang has given us the history.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we need some kind of critical thinking about the money system, some kind of way of dealing with thinking about it, you know?
Well, it's a lot of things are very obvious. Obvious. It's a wasteful system to be always borrowing money to do things. When the government is responsible for the people's well-being. Yeah. Madison said the only constitutional laws are those that solve the take care of the general welfare of the entire population. It's all very obvious.
You think it's obvious?
Yeah, to me, yeah. Everybody must agree.
But you're already a monetary reformer. It's not obvious to the ordinary person on the street.
No, they never heard of any of this.
Yeah.
I guess so, I don't know.
I'm just thinking maybe there's some way of having some kind of teaching unit that is critical thinking, focus on critical thinking to get people to think about it, rather than just giving them the history.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a thought.
Well, I just, I still, this is my favorite rant with Sue, is that, did you know that there is another way? Canada, we get the example of Canada,
Iceland,
and the Greenbacks, Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln.
Well, I also pull a greenback out of my wallet. Still have it here.
And people understand when I tell them that they understand. They understand right away. But then to take them back into the swamp is a mistake.
A big mistake. I can't get them open. There we go. There's real money.
Oh, all right.
You got a greenback.
United States note with Lincoln on it.
Oh.
It doesn't say Federal Reserve note.
No, it's not the funny money at all.
Oh, my God.
It's real money.
Boy, oh, boy. Yeah, this is series 1963.
Yeah.
They were issued up to 71.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Look at that. Wow, that is something.
Real deal.
Look at that nice little cowlick on Lincoln.
Yeah.
I don't think that's on the Federal Reserve or Federal
He looks scared on the Federal Reserve $5 bill.
Wow. Interesting.
Here he looks. Now that settles it.
Yeah.
Wow. Critical thinking, yeah. Okay, I'll do this one. Teenage suicide and murder. An important factor on the teenagers is the unbearable level of hypocrisy that our system now embodies. The suicide rate among American teenagers has risen dramatically. And it says, suicides among young people continue to be a serious problem. Each year in the U.S., thousands of teenagers commit suicide. Suicide is the third leading cause of death for 15 to 24-year-olds, and the sixth leading cause of death for 5 to 14-year-olds. The American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry.
5 years.
And, you know, the whole idea of the hypocrisy around them, I had this conversation with my boss at the bank. He has 4 grown children in their 20s, and every one of them has over $100,000 in college debt.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible. Okay, and do the next one.
Misdiagnosis, absence of a national caretaker. This is a quote from Zarlengo. The nation is controlled more from behind the scenes by financial institutions than by the citizens through elections. It can't solve problems which then develop into crises. An awareness slowly develops that there is nobody home in Washington.
Oh, I don't know.
What, Don?
Yeah, this is something new to me.
Well, that happened during Katrina, where I was watching a lot of the coverage from 10 years ago, you know. I don't know if you've been seeing it. And then you see...
They were talking about it recently, the last week, on WBAI, Katrina.
You see George Bush making no plans to look into anything. And then he just peers out of the window and he sees the flood, and then he goes back to Washington. And then you see him apologizing. He says, now there's been very many mistakes at all levels of government, and I have to apologize, and you know, it's my fault for the federal, it's my fault. And I thought, no, it isn't your fault. You just, your problem is that somebody like you is even there.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
That's right.
It was, well, I mean, to me, I'm sorry, Will. I'm going off on a tirade. No, it hit me, which it didn't 10 years ago, because you see the whole thing laid out with no emotions at this point. It's all happened. And you see, why did that mess develop in the Ninth Ward and the stadium? They didn't make any plans for the poor people.
Yeah.
For the black people. It was just racism.
Should have had boats, big boats. They should have had a lot of big boats to assemble them, get them down.
That's
there.
Right.
They sent buses that couldn't get through.
Well, they're not amphibious, and they have floods. Floods stop them.
I know.
If you have a boat, you can go all the way up till you're on land.
Oh, I agree.
Probably up in Missouri someplace would be a place to park.
Yeah, there was, as Zarlenga says, there was nobody home in Washington.
Poor George Bush looks so clueless, so helpless and clueless, but he shouldn't have been in that position.
I'm talking about Jeb Bush, and he's worse than his brother.
I'll do this one. Monetary reform is crucially needed. It's long overdue to admit that the money system is responsible for so many social crises. It is long overdue.
You really got a good cartoon for this one.
Yeah, look at that banking system, huh? God.
He's perspiring.
I don't mind this one here.
Money's nature must dictate monetary reform. What is money? What money is, Aristotle says, money exists not by nature, but by law. Plato said, a money token for purposes of exchange. Julius Paulus, a Roman jurist, said this device being officially promulgated, circulated and maintained its purchasing power, not so much from its substance as from its quantity. In other words, if you just flood the market with paper more than is needed, it loses its value. Even though it says it's, what's the number there? Let's say it's a $30 bill. It doesn't get you as much if you print too many $30 bills.
Things get more expensive.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do the next one.
Money's nature must dictate monetary reform. What money is after a long darkness? Bishop Berkeley said, whether the true idea of money as such be not altogether that of a ticket or a counter. And then, just a second, I get this out of there. Ben Franklin, to remedy such inconveniences and facilitate exchange, men have invented money, properly called immediate exchange, because through or by its means, labor is exchanged for labor or one commodity for another. And John Locke, Essay on Money and Bullion, says, observe well these rules. It is a very common mistake to say money is a commodity. Bullion is valued by its weight. Money is valued by its stamp. Mm-hmm.
Right, so they were starting to see the true nature of money.
Yeah.
And then we forgot it.
Well, yeah. And do this one.
Alexander Del Mar, Money in Ancient Countries, page 2. What is commonly understood as money has always consisted tangibly of a number of pieces of some material marked by public authority and named or understood in the laws or customs. That its palpable characteristic was its mark of authority is essential characteristic, the possession of value, defined by law, and its function, the legal power to pay debts and taxes, and the mechanical power to facilitate the exchange of other objects possessing value. Now, George F. Knapp, The State Theory of Money, page 40. If we have already declared in the beginning that money is a creation of law, this is not to be interpreted in the narrower sense that it is a creation of jurisprudence, but in the larger sense that it is a creation of the legislative activity of the state, the creation of legislative policy. Well said.
Well said, yeah.
Well said. Narrower sense.
What?
I don't know the meaning of a narrower sense and a larger sense. I don't get it.
Well, the larger sense is the legislative issuance of money by the legislature.
And what is the creation of jurisprudence?
It's just that it's in the law. That's how I take it. You know, it's just the law. But the actual legislature is the one who issues it. That's the creation of it by law, that the legislature is issuing it.
Oh, okay.
It's just not written in the law and that's it.
Oh, I see.
That's how I interpret that.
Yeah.
Doing it instead of just saying there's a law.
Yes.
Do something about it, carry it out.
Yeah. Legislative policy. It's policy, it's not just written in the law.
That's right, it's policy. It's executed.
It's like the words strategy and tactics.
Yeah.
Tactics are the execution, strategy are the plan to do something.
Right. I'll do this one. Stephen Zarlenga, money's essence is an abstract social power embodied in law as an unconditional means of payment. Stephen's very succinct.
Yeah, fewer words are better.
And he also says, this book has shown that it is historically self-evident that the best money systems have been controlled and monitored through law by public authority. Leaving the money power in private hands has invited, even assured, disastrous results. This is also consistent with the logic of money. Since the money system is a creature of law, it rightfully belongs within government, just as the law courts do.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Don, do the next one.
Yeah. We have concluded that the nature of man and of society requires four, not three, branches of government, says Stephen Zarlanga. The three branches of government and are legislative, executive, and judicial. And the question is, what branch can declare laws unconstitutional? And the answer to that question, I think, is judicial. And its characteristics of judicial are that the judicial system consists of the Supreme Court and other federal courts. The second question, to whom do cabinet members report? The answer is the executive, superiors in the executive branch of government. And those executives are the president himself, the vice president, and the cabinet. The third question is, what branch of government initiates and approves laws? The legislative department initiates the laws, and I think the two houses are the Senate and House of Representatives, because I think the Senate is required to approve the law, and then it also requires the approval of the president, because he has a right to veto it if he doesn't approve it. And again, it could be struck down as unconstitutional or something like that by the judicial system.
And then you have the monetary authority.
Then what is suggested in the fourth branch of government would be the monetary department, which would create the money. Although the Constitution says that power resides with the legislative branch of government.
Well, the legislative branch would issue the money via passing laws, how to spend it.
Mm-hmm.
The monetary authority would decide how much money needs to be created.
Yeah, they need expertise in that.
Yeah. And then the legislative would actually how to spend it, for what purpose. The laws.
Mm-hmm.
And the executive would carry out the law. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Don. I mean, Will. Will, sorry.
Okay, there are distractions from sovereign money reform. The gold promoters is one of the distractions. But history shows that over and again, the so-called gold standard has been little more than a ruse and a way to concentrate special monetary privilege into the hands of the plutocracy. So, Arlanga, page 658. And we have the picture of the first bank of the United States. It's with all its columns. A gold standard does not always stop inflation. Indeed, a metallic-based money system is normally a formula for deflation. Deflation hurts industry and labor, but benefits creditors who are repaid with more valuable money. The creditors lose the ability to make money in deflation, but their loan payback is the very same.
Yeah. And do the next one.
Distractions from sovereign money reform, the gold promoters. But history shows that over and again, the so-called gold standard has been little more than a ruse and a way to concentrate special money privileges into the monetary privileges into the hands of a plutocracy. Let me just say that. Henry George, in Social Problems, page 168, derides metallic money. We are digging silver out of certain holes in the ground, called mines, in Nevada and Colorado, and poking it down other holes in the ground, called vaults, in Washington, New York, and San Francisco.
Well written, this guy's.
I love that.
Robert DeFremery, Rights versus Privileges, pages 54 to 55. The essence of hard money is that its supply is fairly stable and there are precise limits to it. And a purely paper or fiat money can be a hard money if we set precise limits to its supply, or it can be a soft money if we set no precise limits to its supply.
Right. So a fiat money is how the money is managed.
It's
whether it's fiat or paper or...
It's value. Depends upon that. How it's managed.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what he's talking about, hard money, soft money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do the next one.
Sorry.
Distractions, the free banking ideologues. Free banking is a system where bankers are allowed to create the money supply in the form of their credits or notes. Bankers are allowed to issue unlimited amounts of money as long as customers are willing to accept it. Professor Frederick Soddy explained why this can't be allowed. The issuer of money who first passes it into circulation cannot help getting something for nothing, namely the exchange value of the money. The value of everyone's holdings of money is directly affected by every new issue or cancellation. It reduces to a hypocritical sham all the enactments to ensure just weights and measure. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The whole idea that the private bankers are creating the money and having the first use of it to give loans and get interest on it, that to me, just right there, that's it. Wait a minute. They're getting the first use of that money, and they're getting this to spend it, by creating loans,
They didn't earn it by doing a lot of hard work.
No.
They just received it.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a power. That's such a power. That's it. That's the basis of the society.
Yeah. So ensuring just weights and measure is just meaningless.
Something's coming here.
Yeah.
All the enactments. What is that? Enactments? It looks like possessive. Is this another word missing, or is it? Should there be no apostrophe there?
No apostrophe.
Oh.
I mean, I think I agree with you. The apostrophe should go.
That's it. Don the Jesuit. He got me.
What was that? You're a Jesuit?
You went to a Jesuit school.
Oh, okay.
They were very precise. Do the next one.
The free banking ideologues. When the government issues the money, it is a tax that benefits all members of society. Together, 99%. When the private banks issue the money, they enrich themselves at the expense of everyone else. They use their privilege to control the government.
Yes.
And he's saying to the crowd, that's nice, but what do you stand for? And they're holding up a sign, end corporate inventory hour, bribery of our elected officials, and return our democracy back to the people. That's nice. But what do you stand for?
Boy, they know how to use words, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They know how to use words.
They went to Jesuit schools.
Which?
Okay. Just a second there. Distractions from sovereign money, local currency, lets, advocates.
And if I go in trust.
Local currency are also called lets.
Gotcha.
Local exchange trading system. They use a local currency to exchange labor and commodities outside the national conserve currency. And you've got a Bernal bucks and something else. In Ithaca we trust, 8 hour.
Yeah, they call them the Ithaca hours.
Ithaca what?
Hours.
Hours.
Yeah. That's the eighth hour.
There's a ligarchy on the bill. The spotted salamander.
Yeah. And to the next one.
Distractions from sovereign money, local currency, lets, advocates. The problem is that while these local systems do no financial harm and can alleviate local cash shortages, they have been a very limited benefit. These currencies will continue to be limited unless they can qualify as a true money form. That means taxes, at least local taxes, have to become payable in them. And that's Stephen. Furthermore, such local currencies do not stop the continued mismanagement of the money system at the national level. Ending that injustice should be our monetary priority.
That's very wise comments.
Yeah.
And you recognize these little people,
yes,
don't you?
Stephen Zarlanga and his wife.
No, it's
no.
Kucinich.
Oh,
Stephen is
I'm sorry. What's Kucinich's first name?
Dennis
Kucinich and his wife, who were at the national level. That's he was at the national level with this.
Yeah.
I'll do the next one. The all money is debt fraction as a distraction from sovereign money. This group confuses the nature of money. They say that since most of the money in circulation is in the form of credits issued by banks, which are also debts to those being credited, that therefore the nature of money is that it is always debt. And you see the greenback dollar, which is debt-free, government issued on the left, versus the Federal Reserve note, which is debt money bank issued. Credit can function imperfectly as money when it has been improperly monetized under the law. For example, the legal treatment of the private Federal Reserve notes as money by accepting them for taxes and making them a legal tender. But they are ultimately private debt. They've been made legal tender.
To the public.
Don.
Distractions from sovereign money. That all money is debt faction. Those who argue that it's credit, that is the only form of money, should realize that they are actually defining money out of existence and substituting credit for it. Money and credit denote two different things. That's one of the reasons we give them separate names. And then they show coins to represent which are money, used as money, and
credit cards.
Credit cards are debt.
That's right. One is different from the other.
Yeah.
We'll do the next one.
Yeah. I'm wondering, is this problem that Zarlinga has with positive money? Because positive money says 97% of our money is debt. I think that's what they said.
But did they say that it should be?
That it is. Yes. Not that it should be, that it is.
Well, Stevens says the same thing.
Doesn't he say the same thing? Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, but he wants to change it. Doesn't positive money want to change, reform the money system?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they want to change away from the debt money into sovereign money. Okay. A society such as the U.S. depending on private bank credits in place of government-created money is operating in moral quicksand. It has established a special privilege of power for those private parties issuing the credit, the bankers. As Professor Saadi and others have shown, this cannot help but do serious harm to the population as a whole. It's our link on page 661. And you've got a mansion on the left, half the dollar, and a poor person on the rise.
And it's unconstitutional by definition and explanation by James Madison, because it is not for the general welfare.
Yeah.
Nope, it's not for our welfare. And
properly constituted government money, except when spent on warfare, tends to be used for the broad interest of the citizens, such as bridge and road and water infrastructure, public health and education, debt-free.
I think that's a levy on the left.
Oh.
Is that a levy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
New Orleans.
Huh.
And that's bridge building.
This one is a Pontchartrain. Comes across the river from
Lake Pontchartrain?
Yeah.
Oh,
where is that?
New Orleans.
It is in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
How? When you go there, I remember going there on a break in, from Marquette, going down to New Orleans, and everybody was saying, howdy.
Wow. There's a picture of a college graduate without any debt.
And no job.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the healthcare little boy.
Yeah.
I'll do the next one. Private credit tends to go for fast profit, defined in its least productive manner, for quickly getting back more than one gives in terms of shuffling paper instruments.
That's pretty good.
So this is a diagram from a couple years ago with my Fed group. We had a session and we created this flow. And on the right, you have the government, the Treasury in green, and next to it, you have the private Fed, New York Fed Bank. Okay. And you have the Federal Reserve Board above in blue. These are the core institutions today around our money system. And you also, below the private Fed Bank, Federal Reserve Bank, you have the commercial banks. And to the left, you have the investment banks. Right? So you got the government, you got the banks, and part of the Fed bank to the left are the primary bond dealers, which are they're decided on by the New York Fed Bank, and they're commercial banks that are given the special ability to buy bonds from the Fed. Government bonds. So this is the mechanism of creating debt money, right? So lower down on the right, you have the households, the 99% versus the 1% household, and you have the corporations. And that's the real economy, right? The buying and selling, the growing of food, the making of products. And they're not getting too much of the money. So where's the money going? It's all the way on the left. So the investment banks deal with the broker-dealers. They have institutional investors and retail investors that they're buying and selling from. And the investors have money managers. And the money managers, they work for the hedge funds, the private banking systems, private equity, custodial banking, wealth management, mutual funds, money managers, all these people. They're managing, their funds have to be managed. So these money managers work with the broker dealers and buying and selling. And where is all of this money going to? Not to the real economy that we need. It's going to the stock market, the bond market, the treasury market, the derivatives market, the currency market, all speculating with these paper wealth. And we saw the beginning of this in Amsterdam in the 1500s, late 1500s, with the beginning of the stock market.
And the Netherlanders were still involved in something you were talking about today. You were talking about something that Netherlands, the Holland people, still active today.
Yes, when I was listening to that interview with the president of Iceland, he said when they decided to put the bankers in prison, they were threatened by Britain and Netherlands, the worst. Mm-hmm. Britain and Netherlands.
Netherlands was the worst, or two together?
The two together. The worst threat to their country. Yeah. And I was so surprised he said the Netherlands. And then I thought, oh, that's where this all comes from.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's where our banking system started.
That's right. Yeah. It's actually the stock market, right? That's where they started doing all this paper manipulation and shuffling around and had shorting and all the corruption. Yeah.
And the banks would deposit where the money was supposed to sit there, but it really ran all over.
That's right.
That's right.
They're not supposed to make loans, and they made loans.
Yes.
That's right. Hypocrisy. I'll do the next one. The all money is debt fraction. It's a mystery why otherwise intelligent persons don't see that such a privilege, bank credit, would necessarily fall into the hands of the already wealthy, unjustly enriching them, and further aggravating the obscene concentration of wealth in America. Modern apologists also assert that bankers are generally of high moral character. But why would moral people seek to gain an unfair advantage over their fellow citizens through a little understood legal privilege to engage in a process that necessarily robs from society? If that bank credit has been improperly substituted for money, the bankers are more in control of the society than is the legislature, executive, and judiciary, not to mention the citizens. And that's the money control in Washington.
He says it's a mystery why otherwise intelligent people don't see this. Not a mystery to me. I still can't figure it out. You know, I read this and I go, yeah, right. And then I read it 2 weeks later and I go, huh, let me think. And I go, I think it's hard.
There's no validation for it. And you're growing up.
I guess.
It's a shift.
Well, it's a lie. You're told a lie about how it works.
And everyone believes the lie.
Yeah.
Even if they don't believe it, it just keeps on happening.
That's right.
Well, if you don't believe it, you're looked upon as you're little nuts.
Yeah.
Well, Steve Keen said that the main characteristic of a person that's a banker is to be a psychopath.
Oh, yeah.
Not to have
That's yes, true.
Not to have feelings. Not yes. to have empathy.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree. No empathy. Okay. Don, do the next one.
Government's responsibility to provide the money. We regard the provision of the money mechanism to society by government as a major advance over any prior barter or credit arrangements, says Steve Zaranga on page 663. Private credit used as money transfers wealth and power to the few at the expense of the people of the nation. Usury on the national money supply passes labor and capital wealth every second of every day to the owners of the private banking system. Private credit debt money puts the government into debt. Private credit debt money puts the people and businesses of the nation into debt. And ultimately, because of the ability to create credit money and destroy credit money through inflation and deflation, the owners of the banks transfer the true wealth of the nation to themselves. Today, the top 1% own 42% of the financial wealth nationwide. The pie chart here shows the financial wealth distribution among different groups in the population. In 2010, the bottom 80% has 5% of the financial wealth in the purple piece of pie.
No.
80% only get 5% of the wealth. The next 10% of the wealth.
Well, wait a minute, I don't understand. They have the stock market every night on the news.
Yeah, but the
it's not
80% don't bother buying. They don't have enough money.
Yeah.
Can't take a chance with it. The next 10% has 11% of the financial wealth. I don't know who they are or anything else. The next 5% has 13% of financial wealth. The next 4% has 30% of financial wealth. And the top 1% has 42% of the financial wealth.
Oh, God. I don't hang around with any of them. They're outside my league. Wow. Will, do the next one.
See how he looks different from the...
Yeah,
that's right.
From the,
okay, we have government's responsibility to provide the money. We regard the provision of the money mechanism to society by government as a major advance over any prior barter or credit arrangements. It's our link at page 663. And you have greenback, and you have a $5 United States of America. No, is that also the greenback?
No, that's a Federal
Reserve note.
Funny money.
No, that's not a Federal Reserve. Yeah, it is. Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
I see it. Okay. Lincoln's greenback dollar, debt-free money issued by the national government and Federal Reserve, $5 note, is debt money issued by the private banking system. We can understand why the bankers, wait a minute, were so anxious to remove the greenbacks from circulation, where they provided a daily practical lesson in monetary theory. Let me get them out of the way, page 663, Love Science and Money.
Yeah, they wanted that out of the way, boy, in the worst way. Get rid of it.
Don hung on to one.
Will, do the next one.
Reforming the Federal Reserve System, the AMI strategy. Fortunately, there is a monetary reform that can reach our goal for the nation to control its money system and to the end the monetary privileges that the financial classes have grabbed. Reform can begin even without a complete and detailed blueprint of the ideal money system, page 663. 63 of Law, Science, and Money. Special care must be taken to avoid a program that leads to deflation, as some past monetary reforms have. And that's also on page 663. One step at a time.
And to the next one.
The AMI strategy, reforming the Federal Reserve System. Zarlanga says, the American Monetary Institute's strategy for monetary reform is to concentrate on three minimal reforms that place time on the side of justice. These minimal reforms should be agreeable to thoughtful, honest observers. But on these three points, there should be no compromise. Reform 1, nationalization of the Federal Reserve. Reform 2, ending fractional reserve banking and instituting the 100% reserve solution. Reform 3, institute anti-deflation programs and beware of deflation. Now, change is a process, not an event, as we see from the footprints in the sand. And a wife says to her Republican husband, I guess, don't even think about it. And he has compromise and promises on his luggage, which is going to D.C.
Right. Stephen's point here is that you need all three, and you can't compromise. And this is the very basic
bare bones.
Based on the history that he knows. I'll do the next one. The government, with political support, should nationalize the Federal Reserve System by buying all the shares of the 12 Federal Reserve banks from the private commercial banks who own them. This is not new. England did the same in 1946 and nationalized the Bank of England. And Canada did the same in 1938 when it bought all the private shares of the Bank of Canada. So we have the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada, and next to be nationalized, the United States Federal Reserve System. It's not new. It's been done before with wonderful results for the other countries. Don, do the next one.
Nationalization of the Federal Reserve is Reform 1. Several past chairmen of the House Banking Committee have introduced bills to do away with the private Federal Reserve System, says Steve Zarlanga on page 664. Wright Patman, chairman of the House Committee on Banking and Currency from 1965 to 75, introduced bills to remove the Federal Reserve System. And the photo shows the man's face. He lived from 1893 to 1976. Pretty old. Now, I believe the system should be changed. The Constitution of the United States does not give the banks the power to create money. The Constitution says that Congress shall have the power to create money. But now, under our system, we will sell bonds to commercial banks and obtain credit from those banks. I believe the time will come when people will demand that this be changed. I believe the time will come in this country when they will actually blame you and me and everyone else connected with this Congress for sitting idly by and permitting such an idiotic system to continue. I make that statement after years of study.
Mm-hmm. So did he slip down the stairs going out of the Senate building?
76 and 7 years were...
He's in his
80s.
83. Yeah. Sounds like a smart guy.
It took him years to figure it out. Just a normal guy who tried hard.
This is the guy that Joe Bongiovanni's dad worked for.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
Yeah, right that way.
What did his father do?
I don't know, but his father's the one that taught Joe all about monetary reform. It's because he worked.
Oh my goodness!
So he worked down in Washington with in the office of Wright Patman.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a great experience.
Like that was a Texan. He was a Texan, I think. He was a Texas congressman.
Hmm. That is so neat.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where Joe comes from. That's how come he knows it so good.
Wow. I wish my father had worked for Wright Patman. Wow. We'll do the next one.
There he is, Henry Gonzalez. Nationalization of the Federal Reserve. Several past chairmen of the House Banking Committee have introduced bills to do away with the Federal Reserve System, says Zarling in 664. And there's Henry Gonzalez. He's a congressman from San Antonio, chairman of the House Banking and Currency Committee, introduced legislation to repeal the Federal Reserve System almost every year. The legislation was always defeated and the media was silent. Good man, you can tell by his smile.
Tell people what you told me earlier about meeting him.
Yeah, well, he was, I thought everybody heard it. But,
did everybody hear it?
No.
Oh, Ann didn't.
Okay, I was at a breakfast, I think it was a Chamber of Commerce breakfast to meet the Congress, and I came in and sat down, and he was sitting right by me, and we talked a little bit. I just knew, only thing I knew about him was that he was a congressman from San Antonio, and that he was the one that built the river, they built the river walk that revitalized downtown. And when you're there, it's almost like you're in a different world.
In Washington?
No, in San Antonio.
Oh. What do you mean by it's a different world?
Well, you're in a Hispanic world when you're in San Antonio with all that architecture around you. It's not like being in Oklahoma, I know that, or New York City.
Huh, interesting. Hmm.
It's a beautiful area.
And that's the end of part one, chapter 23. This is Will's conclusion. The control of money without control from the public leads to corruption, usurpation, and slavery.